with the Hephaestus cabin, and he couldn't hide it from Chiron or his two best friends. "Welcome to Bunker 9," he said, as confidently as he could. "Come on in." The group was silent as they toured the facility. Everything was just as Leo had left it. Giant machines, work tables, old maps and schematics. Only one thing had changed. Festus's head was sitting on the central table, still battered and scorched from his final crash in Omaha. Leo went over to it, a bitter taste in his mouth, and stroked the dragon's forehead. "I'm sorry, Festus, but I won't forget you." Jason put a hand on Leo's shoulder. "Hephaestus brought it here for you?" Leo nodded. "But you can't repair him," Jason guessed. "No way," Leo said. "But the head is going to be reused. Festus will be going with us." Piper came over and frowned. "What do you mean?" Before Leo could answer, Nyssa cried out, "Guys, look at this!" She was standing at one of the work tables, flipping through a sketchbook, diagrams for hundreds of different machines and weapons. "I've never seen anything like these," Nyssa said. "There are more amazing ideas here than in Daedalus's workshop. It would take a century just to prototype them all."
"Who built this place?" Jake Mason said. "And why?"
Chiron stayed silent, but Leo focused on the wall map he'd seen during his first visit. It showed Camp Half-Blood with a line of triremes in the sound, catapults mounted in the hills around the valley, and spots marked for traps, trenches, and ambush sites.
"It's a wartime command center," he said. "The camp was attacked once, wasn't it?"
"In the Titan War?" Piper asked. Nyssa shook her head.
"No. Besides, that map looks really old. The date? Does that say 1864?
They all turned to Chiron. The centaur's tail swished fretfully.
"The camp has been attacked many times," he admitted. "That map is from the last Civil War."
Apparently, Leo wasn't the only one confused. The other Hephaestus campers looked at each other and frowned. "Civil War?" Piper said. "You mean the American Civil War, like 150 years ago?"
"Yes and no," Chiron said. "The two conflicts, mortal and demigod, mirrored each other, as they usually do in Western history. Look at any civil war or revolution from the fall of Rome onward, and it marks a time when demigods also fought one another. But that civil war was particularly horrible. For American mortals, it is still their bloodiest conflict of all time, worse than their casualties in the two world wars. For demigods, it was equally devastating. Even back then, this valley was Camp Half-Blood. There was a horrible battle in these woods lasting for days, with terrible losses on both sides."
"Both sides?" Leo said. "You mean the camp split apart?"
"No," Jason spoke up. "He means two different groups. Camp Half-Blood was one side in the war." Leo wasn't sure he wanted an answer, but he asked,
"Who was the other?"
Chiron glanced up at the tattered Bunker 9 banner, as if remembering the day it was raised.
"The answer is dangerous," he warned. "It is something I swore upon the River Styx never to speak of. After the American Civil War, the gods were so horrified by the toll it took on their children that they swore it would never happen again. The two groups were separated. The gods bent all their will, wove the mist as tightly as they could, to make sure the enemies never remembered each other, never met on their quests, so that bloodshed could be avoided. This map is from the final dark days of 1864, the last time the two groups fought. We've had several close calls since then. The 1960s were particularly dicey. but we've managed to avoid another civil war, at least so far. Just as Leo guessed, this bunker was a command center for the Hephaestus cabin. In the last century, it has been reopened a few times, usually as a hiding place in times of great unrest. But coming here is dangerous. It stirs old memories, awakens the old feuds. Even when the Titans threatened last year, I did not think it worth the risk to use this place.
Suddenly, Leo's sense of triumph turned to guilt.
Hey, look, this place found me. It was meant to happen. It's a good thing.
I hope you're right, Chiron said.
I am.
Leo pulled the old drawing out of his pocket and spread it on the table for everyone to see.
There, he said proudly. Aeolus returned that to me. I drew it when I was 5. That's my destiny.
Nyssa frowned.
Leo, it's a crayon drawing of a boat. Look!
He pointed at the largest schematic on the bulletin board. The blueprint showing a Greek trireme. Slowly, his cabin mate's eyes widened as they compared the two designs. The number of masts and oars, even the decorations on the shields and sails were exactly the same as on Leo's drawing.
That's impossible, Nyssa said. That blueprint has to be a century old at least.
Prophecy unclear. Flight.
Jake Mason read from the notes on the blueprint.
It's a diagram for a flying ship. Look, that's the landing gear. And weaponry. Holy Hephaestus. Rotating ballista. Mounted crossbows. Celestial bronze plating. That thing would be one spankin' hot war machine. Was it ever made?
Not yet, Leo said. Look at the masthead.
There was no doubt. The figure at the front of the ship was the head of a dragon. A very particular dragon.
Festus, Piper said.
Everyone turned and looked at the dragon's head sitting on the table.
He's meant to be our masthead, Leo said. Our good luck charm. Our eyes at sea. I'm supposed to build this ship. I'm gonna call it the Argo II. And guys, I'll need your help.
The Argo II, Piper smiled.
After Jason's ship.
Jason looked a little uncomfortable, but he nodded. Leo's right. That ship is just what we need for our journey.
What journey? Nyssa said. You just got back.
Piper ran her fingers over the old crayon drawing.
We've got to confront Porphyrion the Giant King. He said he would destroy the gods at their roots.
Indeed, Chiron said. Much of Rachel's great prophecy is still a mystery to me, but one thing is clear. You three, Jason, Piper, and Leo, are among the 7 demigods who must take on that quest. You must confront the giants in their homeland, where they are strongest. You must stop them before they can wake Gia fully, before they destroy Mount Olympus.
Nyssa shifted.
You don't mean Manhattan, do you?
No,
Leo said. The original Mount Olympus. We have to sail to Greece.
Chapter 54. Leo. It took a few minutes for that to settle in. Then the other Hephaestus campers started asking questions all at once. Who were the other 4 demigods? How long would it take to build the boat? Why didn't everyone get to go to Greece?
Heroes!
Chiron struck his hoof on the floor.
All the details are not clear yet, but Leo is correct. He will need your help to build the Argo II. It is perhaps the greatest project Cavan 9 has ever undertaken. Even greater than the Bronze Dragon.
It'll take a year, at least, Nyssa guessed. Do we have that much time?
You have 6 months, at most,
Chiron said.
You should sail by summer solstice, when the god's power is strongest. Besides, we evidently cannot trust the wind gods, and the summer winds are the least powerful and easiest to navigate. You dare not sail any later, or you may be too late to stop the giants. You must avoid ground travel, using only air and sea. So this vehicle is perfect. Jason being the son of the sky god.
His voice trailed off, but Leo figured Chiron was thinking about his missing student, Percy Jackson, the son of Poseidon. He would have been good on this voyage, too. Jake Mason turned to Leo.
Well, one thing's for sure. You are now senior counselor. This is the biggest honor the cabin has ever had. Anyone object?
Nobody did. All his cabin mates smiled at him, and Leo could almost feel their cabin's curse breaking, their sense of hopelessness melting away.
It's official, then, Jake said. You're the man.
For once, Leo was speechless. Ever since his mom died, he'd spent his life on the run. Now he'd found a home and a family. He'd found a job to do. And as scary as it was, Leo wasn't tempted to run. Not even a little.
Well, he said at last, if you guys elect me leader, you must be even crazier than I am. So let's build a spankin' hot war machine.
Chapter 55. Jason. Jason waited alone in Cabin 1. Annabeth and Rachel were due any minute for the head counselor's meeting, and Jason needed time to think. His dreams the night before had been worse than he'd wanted to share, even with Piper. His memory was still foggy, but bits and pieces were coming back. The night Lupa had tested him at the wolf house, to decide if he would be a pup or food. Then the long trip south to... He couldn't remember, but he had flashes of his old life. The day he'd gotten his tattoo. The day he'd been raised on a shield and proclaimed a praetor. His friends' faces. Dakota, Gwendolyn, Hazel, Bobby, and Raina. Definitely there'd been a girl named Raina. He wasn't sure what she'd meant to him, but the memory made him question what he felt about Piper. And wonder if he was doing something wrong. The problem was, he liked Piper a lot. Jason moved his stuff to the corner alcove where his sister had once slept. He put Thalia's photograph back on the wall so he didn't feel alone. He stared up at the frowning statue of Zeus, mighty and proud. But the statue didn't scare him anymore. It just made him feel sad. I know you can hear me, Jason said to the statue. The statue said nothing. Its painted eyes seemed to stare at him. I wish I could talk with you in person, Jason continued. But I understand you can't do that. The Roman gods don't like to interact with mortals so much. And, well, you're the king. You've got to set an example. More silence. Jason had hoped for something. A bigger-than-usual rumble of thunder, a bright light, a smile. No, never mind. A smile would have been creepy. I remember some things, he said. The more he talked, the less self-conscious he felt. I remember that it's hard being a son of Jupiter. Everyone is always looking at me to be a leader, but I always feel alone. I guess you feel the same way up on Olympus. The other gods challenge your decisions. Sometimes you've got to make hard choices, and the others criticize you. And you can't come to my aid like other gods might. You've got to keep me at a distance so it doesn't look like you're playing favorites. I guess I just wanted to say... Jason took a deep breath. I understand all that. It's okay. I'm going to try to do my best. I'll try to make you proud. But I could really use some guidance, Dad. If there's anything you can do, help me so I can help my friends. I'm afraid I'll get them killed. I don't know how to protect them. The back of his neck tingled. He realized someone was standing behind him. He turned and found a woman in a black hooded robe with a goatskin cloak over her shoulders and a sheathed Roman sword, a gladius, in her hands. "Hera," he said. She pushed back her hood.
"To you, I have always been Juno. And your father has already sent you guidance, Jason. He sent you Piper and Leo. They are not just your responsibility. They are also your friends. Listen to them, and you will do well."
"Did Jupiter send you here to tell me that?"
"No one sends me anywhere, Hero," she said. "I am not a messenger."
"But you got me into this. Why did you send me to this camp?"
"I think you know," Juno said. "An exchange of leaders was necessary. It was the only way to bridge the gap."
"I didn't agree to it."
"No, but Zeus gave your life to me, and I am helping you fulfill your destiny."
Jason tried to control his anger. He looked down at his orange camp shirt and the tattoos on his arm, and he knew these things should not go together. He had become a contradiction, a mixture as dangerous as anything Medea could cook up. "You're not giving me all my memories," he said, "even though you promised."
"Most will return in time," Juno said, "but you must find your own way back. You need these next months with your new friends, your new home. You're gaining their trust. By the time you sail in your ship, you will be a leader at this camp, and you will be ready to be a peacemaker between two great powers."
"What if you're not telling the truth?" he asked. "What if you're doing this to cause another civil war?" Juno's expression was impossible to read. Amusement? Disdain? Affection? Possibly all three. As much as she appeared human, Jason knew she was not. He could still see that blinding light, the true form of the goddess that had seared itself into his brain. She was Juno and Hera. She existed in many places at once. Her reasons for doing something were never simple.
"I am the goddess of family," she said. "My family has been divided for too long."
"They divided us so we don't kill each other," Jason said. "That seems like a pretty good reason."
"The prophecy demands that we change. The giants will rise. Each can only be killed by a god and demigod working together. Those demigods must be the seven greatest of the age. As it stands, they are divided between two places. If we remain divided, we cannot win. Gia is counting on this. You must unite the heroes of Olympus and sail together to meet the giants on the ancient battlegrounds of Greece. Only then will the gods be convinced to join you. It will be the most dangerous quest, the most important voyage ever attempted by the children of the gods."
Jason looked up again at the glowering statue of his father. "It's not fair," Jason said. "I could ruin everything."
"You could," Juno agreed. "But gods need heroes. We always have."
"Even you? I thought you hated heroes." The goddess gave him a dry smile.
"I have that reputation. But if you want the truth, Jason, I often envy other gods their mortal children. You demigods can span both worlds. I think this helps your godly parents, even Jupiter, curse him, to understand the mortal world better than I."
Juno sighed so unhappily that despite his anger, Jason almost felt sorry for her.
"I am the goddess of marriage," she said. "It is not in my nature to be faithless. I have only two godly children, Ares and Hephaestus, both of whom are disappointments. I have no mortal heroes to do my bidding, which is why I am so often bitter toward demigods. Heracles, Aeneas, all of them. But it is also why I favored the first Jason, a pure mortal who had no godly parent to guide him, and why I am glad Zeus gave you to me. You will be my champion, Jason. You will be the greatest of heroes and bring unity to the demigods, and thus to Olympus."
Her words settled over him, as heavy as sandbags. 2 days ago, he'd been terrified by the idea of leading demigods into a great prophecy, sailing off to battle the giants and save the world. He was still terrified, but something had changed. He no longer felt alone. He had friends now, and a home to fight for. He even had a patron goddess looking out for him, which had to count for something, even if she seemed a little untrustworthy. Jason had to stand up and accept his destiny, just as he had done when he faced Porphyrion with his bare hands. Sure, it seemed impossible. He might die, but his friends were counting on him. "And if I fail?" he asked.
"Great victory requires great risk," she admitted. "Fail, and there will be bloodshed like we have never seen. Demigods will destroy one another. The giants will overrun Olympus. Gaia will wake, and the earth will shake off everything we have built over 5 millennia. It will be the end of us all."
"Great. Just great." Someone pounded on the cabin doors. Juno pulled her hood back over her face. Then she handed Jason the sheathed gladius.
"Take this for the weapon you lost. We will speak again. Like it or not, Jason, I am your sponsor and your link to Olympus. We need each other."
The goddess vanished as the doors creaked open and Piper walked in.
"Annabeth and Rachel are here," she said. "Chiron has summoned the council."
Chapter 56. Jason. The council was nothing like Jason imagined. For one thing, it was in the big house rec room, around a ping-pong table, and one of the satyrs was serving nachos and soda. Somebody had brought Seymour the leopard head in from the living room and hung him on the wall. Every once in a while, a counselor would toss him a snossage. Jason looked around the room and tried to remember everyone's name. Thankfully, Leo and Piper were sitting next to him. It was their first meeting as senior counselors. Clarice, leader of the Ares cabin, had her boots on the table, but nobody seemed to care. Clovis from Hypno's cabin was snoring in the corner, while Butch from Iris' cabin was seeing how many pencils he could fit in Clovis's nostrils. Travis Stoll from Hermes was holding a lighter under a ping-pong ball to see if it would burn, and Will Solace from Apollo was absently wrapping and unwrapping an ace bandage around his wrist. The counselor from Hecate cabin, Llewellyn something or other, was playing Got Your Nose with Miranda Gardner from Demeter, except that Llewellyn really had magically disconnected Miranda's nose, and Miranda was trying to get it back. Jason had hoped Thalia would show. She'd promised, after all. But she was nowhere to be seen. Chiron had told him not to worry about it. Thalia often got sidetracked fighting monsters or running quests for Artemis, and she would probably arrive soon. But still, Jason worried. Rachel Dare, the Oracle, sat next to Chiron at the head of the table. She was wearing her Clarion Academy school uniform dress, which seemed a bit odd, but she smiled at Jason.
Annabeth didn't look so relaxed. She wore armor over her camp clothes, with her knife at her side and her blonde hair pulled back in a ponytail. As soon as Jason walked in, she fixed him with an expectant look, as if she were trying to extract information out of him by sheer willpower.
"Let's come to order," Chiron said. "Llewellyn, please give Miranda her nose back. Travis, if you kindly extinguish the flaming ping-pong ball. And Butch, I think 20 pencils is really too many for any human nostril. Thank you. Now, as you can see, Jason, Piper, and Leo have returned successfully. More or less. Some of you have heard parts of their story, but I will let them fill you in."
Everyone looked at Jason. He cleared his throat and began the story. Piper and Leo chimed in from time to time, filling in the details he forgot. It only took a few minutes, but it seemed like longer with everyone watching him. The silence was heavy, and for so many ADHD demigods to sit still listening for that long, Jason knew the story must have sounded pretty wild. He ended with Hera's visit right before the meeting.
"So Hera was here," Annabeth said, "talking to you."
Jason nodded. "Look, I'm not saying I trust her."
"That's smart," Annabeth said.
"But she isn't making this up about another group of demigods. That's where I came from."
"Romans." Clarice tossed Seymour a snossage. "You expect us to believe there's another camp with demigods, but they follow the Roman forms of the gods. And we've never heard of them."
Piper sat forward. "The gods have kept the two groups apart, because every time they see each other, they try to kill each other."
"I can respect that," Clarice said. "Still, why haven't we run across each other on quests?"
"Oh, yes," Chiron said sadly. "You have. Many times. It's always a tragedy, and always the gods do their best to wipe clean the memories of those involved. The rivalry goes all the way back to the Trojan War, Clarice. The Greeks invaded Troy and burned it to the ground. The Trojan hero Aeneas escaped and eventually made his way to Italy, where he founded the race that would someday become Rome. The Romans grew more and more powerful, worshipping the same gods but under different names, and with slightly different personalities."
"More warlike," Jason said, "more united. More about expansion, conquest, and discipline."
"Yuck,"
Travis put in. Several of the others looked equally uncomfortable, though Clarice shrugged like it sounded okay to her. Annabeth twirled her knife on the table.
"And the Romans hated the Greeks. They took revenge when they conquered the Greek Isles and made them part of the Roman Empire."
"Not exactly hated them," Jason said. "The Romans admired Greek culture and were a little jealous. In return, the Greeks thought the Romans were barbarians, but they respected their military power. So during Roman times, demigods started to divide, either Greek or Roman."
"And it's been that way ever since," Annabeth guessed. "But this is crazy. Chiron, where were the Romans during the Titan War? Didn't they want to help?"
Chiron tugged at his beard.
"They did help, Annabeth. While you and Percy were leading the battle to save Manhattan, who do you think conquered Mount Othrys? The Titans' base in California."
"Hold on," Travis said. "You said Mount Othrys just crumbled when we beat Kronos."
"No,"
Jason said. He remembered flashes of the battle. "A giant in starry armor and a helm mounted with ram's horns." He remembered his army of demigods scaling Mount Tam, fighting through hordes of snake monsters.
"It didn't just fall. We destroyed their palace. I defeated the Titan Creos myself."
Annabeth's eyes were as stormy as Aventus. Jason could almost see her thoughts moving, putting the pieces together.
"The Bay Area.
We demigods were always told to stay away from it because Mount Othrys was there. But that wasn't the only reason, was it? The Roman camp. It's got to be somewhere near San Francisco. I bet it was put there to keep watch on the Titans' territory. Where is it?
Chiron shifted in his wheelchair.
I cannot say. Honestly, even I have never been trusted with that information. My counterpart, Lupa, is not exactly the sharing type. Jason's memory, too, has been burned away.
The camp's heavily veiled with magic, Jason said, and heavily guarded. We could search for years and never find it. Rachel Dare laced her fingers. Of all the people in the room, only she didn't seem nervous about the conversation.
But you'll try, won't you? You'll build Leo's boat, the Argo II. And before you make for Greece, you'll sail for the Roman camp. You'll need their help to confront the giants.
Bad plan, Clarice warned. If those Romans see a warship coming, they'll assume we're attacking.
You're probably right, Jason agreed. But we have to try.
I was sent here to learn about Camp Half-Blood, to try to convince you the two camps don't have to be enemies. A peace offering.
Rachel said, because Hera is convinced we need both camps to win the war with the giants. Seven heroes of Olympus, some Greek, some Roman.
Annabeth nodded.
Your great prophecy. What's the last line?
And foes bear arms to the doors of death.
Gia has opened the doors of death, Annabeth said. She's letting out the worst villains of the underworld to fight us. Medea, Midas, there'll be more, I'm sure. Maybe the line means that the Roman and Greek demigods will unite and find the doors and close them.
Or it could mean they fight each other at the doors of death, Clarice pointed out. It doesn't say we'll cooperate.
There was silence as the campers let that happy thought sink in.
I'm going, Annabeth said. Jason, when you get this ship built, let me go with you.
I was hoping you'd offer, Jason said. You, of all people, we'll need you.
Wait, Leo frowned. I mean, that's cool with me and all, but why Annabeth of all people?
Annabeth and Jason studied one another, and Jason knew she had put it together. She saw the dangerous truth.
Hera said my coming here was an exchange of leaders, Jason said, a way for the two camps to learn of each other's existence.
Yeah, Leo said. So?
An exchange goes two ways, Jason said. When I got here, my memory was wiped. I didn't know who I was or where I belonged. Fortunately, you guys took me in and I found a new home. I know you're not my enemy. The Roman camp, they're not so friendly. You prove your worth quickly, or you don't survive. They may not be so nice to him, and if they learn where he comes from, he's going to be in serious trouble.
Him? Leo said. Who are you talking about?
My boyfriend, Annabeth said grimly. He disappeared around the same time Jason appeared. If Jason came to Camp Half-Blood...
Exactly, Jason agreed. Percy Jackson is at the other camp, and he probably doesn't even remember who he is.
This is Joshua Swanson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Heroes of Olympus, Book 1, The Lost Hero, by Rick Riordan. This program was produced by Janet Stark and directed by Fred Sanders. Text copyright 2010 by Rick Riordan. Production copyright 2010 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.